Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Really, WC?
Just briefly touched upon the film Casino Royale, so now to the
light touch.
Yeah, we turn out of the box office, and the Queen and Prince Philip attended the Odeon Leicester Square premiere. Imagine them there. It became the first ever Bond film to be given a general release in China, although some scenes were cut, not in terms of the torture scenes, but so that people could understand Texas Hold'em poker. Yeah. No, that's true, but they did in England. They cut some scenes heavily, like you said, to get the 12A, mainly the staircase fight and the torture scene. So, be interesting to see that 15 version. I'm not sure I have done.
I'd love to see that.
Is it that anything's different, or has it just been reclassified?
It'll just be frames, yeah. And it'll be sound and lingering on injury detail is generally what pushes it. It was all the rage back in the mid-2000s, wasn't it? Oh, let's push the 12A as far as we can.
Yeah,
it was.
Chris Nolan was the big proponent of that, isn't it?
Yeah, although his films aren't actually that. The violence is always...
It's always blood.
It's always... Oh, what do you call it?
Like, suggested rather than
the word.
Emotional violence.
I don't know. It was emotional violence. I remember seeing The Dark Knight. I nipped out to go. It was the second time I'd seen it, so I nipped out to go to the toilet, and there was like an 8-year-old boy watching it because it's Batman.
Okay.
He looked absolutely terrified. It was too intense for him. Film would be 15, really.
The only Batman film for kids is Batman and Robin, isn't it? Batman Forever's too much. $150 million production budget, so it wasn't.
That's
it wasn't
the number,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Well done.
Everything's $150 million.
Password Vespa in the Eon account. Even though they were trying to strip down, it was slightly more expensive to make than Dying of the Day, and that included, that had all the CGI as well. So quite
interesting. But they spent.
That shows you that
25.
Spend the money wisely. Yeah.
Is that suits the VR suit that took most of the budget?
Oh yeah,
great,
Harry. That if we ever get out of this, and you go to a fancy James Bond fancy dress party, I expect. I don't think anyone could afford it though. So you're right. It'll have to be like. When you made a tin foil version or something like that. Yeah. Cardboard boxes.
Cereal box. For
Cereal box. Yeah. So we mentioned buying of the day. The product placement was down a little bit as a result. Like I said, there was still a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
There's the four Mondeo. Heineken was introduced, although it's a lot more subtle, isn't it? There's also a Heineken adverts with Eva Green. Not seen those.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. So it grossed just under 607 million worldwide. So it was obviously a massive hit. Dying of the Day was the biggest ever Bond in terms of numbers until then, with 432. So even way up on that. So
victory.
Wow.
Yeah. It was the fourth highest grossing film of the year worldwide. And obviously it was the biggest in the UK. And it's been It was in the all-time top 10 in the UK until 2011. And of course, Skyfall now, isn't it? Skyfall was the biggest ever film ever in the UK.
Yeah. I remember that breaking a load of box office records. Yeah.
So adjusted for inflation, it will be the seventh highest, below From Russia with Love and just above Moonraker. Two slightly different films there.
Yeah, which shows the strength of the franchise.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, yeah. We love this franchise. Yeah, we love Casino Royale. The Blu-ray edition, which you've mentioned, I don't know whether this is the 15 one. Has that come more recently? But the original Blu-ray became the highest selling film on HD format to date in the UK.
Wow!
So again, people are watching it again and again, aren't they? They must like it.
Yeah.
And did you know this? A copy was given to the first 500,000 PlayStation 3 owners who signed up to the PlayStation Network.
Oh, yeah. Incredible. Lovely Sony cross-branding.
Yeah, exactly. More cross-branding.
Yes. Of course.
Synergy. Although,
there wasn't a game, though, was there? Was it?
Yeah. There's good. No Casino Royale game, no.
No, because there's no platform levels or there's no...
Yeah, oh,
there's no action. Yeah, there are, yeah, of course there would be.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
there are Daniel Craig Bond games, but they're not based. I think there I think there is a Quantum of Solace, game, and then there's a completely different game. Which the name escapes me at the moment, but it's something. I'd have to
keep the Legends was the greatest hit one with the previous films, but with Craig's face sadly on all of them.
Yeah. Wasn't there the Criminal GoldenEye rebooted?
Yeah.
Rogue Agent. Reagan as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Which had Nicole Scherzinger singing GoldenEye on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll mention
Bloodstone.
Bloodstone, Blood.
Daniel Craig Bond game.
Smart Blood.
Which does not have good reviews.
Whoa, that's so underrated, though, isn't it?
Yeah. They're not very well marketed, are they? You don't see loads of adverts for them.
No,
when they come out. You'd think they'd be massive. Kids don't like James Bond anymore.
Well, that's the issue.
This is another. So critically, it's the most critically acclaimed Bond of all time, and obviously it was it was voted in the recent Twitter poll out of all the Bond fans on Twitter, and nearly getting onto 1,000 people who submitted the votes, ranking all the films. It was finished top ahead of From Russia with Love, which was second. What was third was Goldfinger, and then Her Majesty's fourth. Yeah, GoldenEye was seventh. We thought that would do better. Anyway, that's Rotten Tomatoes 95%. So it's just. Just incredible. So this is
coming for this one.
No. So, I think
they could all be 3-star reviews though. That's...
Yeah. That's true. Yes. Stephen Carty will explain. Yeah, their consensus. You know, they give a sort of strap line, don't they, for the site? Casino Royale disposes of the silliness and gadgetry that plagued recent James Bond outings. Well, just the last one.
Well, exactly.
Exactly. This is it, isn't it? Daniel Craig delivers what fans and critics have been waiting for: a caustic, haunted, intense reinvention of 007.
Yeah.
So it's not top on their site, though, even though it's got 95%. The other two films which have 95 are the first two, Doctor No and From Us With Love, and Goldfinger has 99%.
Wow.
Babyish. Metacritic's got 80, so it's behind Goldfinger and From Us With Love, the same again. But on IMDb, it's top. It's got 8. Flip it. I mean, anything. That's 8 and above is outstanding, isn't it, really, on IMDb?
Good, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if you thought, wow, this film's an 8, and then... No, I'm joking.
I think Jurassic Park's only an 8 on IMDb. That's the caliber we're talking about.
Yeah, they're a bit weird, aren't they? Those like Fight Club's in the top 10 films of all time or something.
Yeah, it's got like a massive obsessive cult following, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, you don't understand Fincher's it. Top 10.
You don't understand that it's a satire.
Yeah. Anyway,
people who take Fight Club literally. You can cut that out.
yeah.
Like celebrating this.
Dear me.
This culture. Dear me.
You people.
This country.
Disgusting.
Cinema Score gave it A-. So that's pretty good. That's the audiences, of course. Sorry? And
I've just not heard of that before. Cinema Score or
we've
A's and B's and C's.
Yeah, well, it's because the early ones we've done, obviously, it didn't exist then, did it? Yeah, they weren't really... Really bothered what people thought, because everyone loved everything.
Star days.
Yeah. The Daily Telegraph compared the quality of Craig's characterization of Bond to Sean Connery's babyish, and praised the script as smartly written. The Times... this is better. The Times compared the portrayal to that of Timothy Dalton.
Yes. Good.
Mm. Yeah. Well, someone saw it back then.
Yeah, I hope this isn't a recent review, a re-review. BBC, Variety, and Kim Newman, of course, of Empire, another thing, with Commode, all described Craig as the first actor... to truly embody Ian Fleming's James Bond from the original novel. So Connery didn't it wasn't good enough about iconic, brutal and cold. So finally, imagine that, I've been waiting 50 years for a good person to play James Bond. Roger Ebert, 4 out of 4.
I love, Tom, the angry noise of you folding the sheets there.
Get this over with.
Yeah, gritted teeth. Yeah, Roger Ebert, 4-star. Craig makes a superb Bond. He gives the sense of a hard man wounded by his life and his job, and nonetheless cares about people and right and wrong. Well, he wouldn't go on to in the subsequent ones.
Bind,
yes. Roger Moore, I'm afraid. This is Roger Moore talking now. Daniel Craig impressed me. I won't do it in his voice, but could do. Daniel Craig impressed me so greatly in his debut outing by introducing a more gritty, unrefined edge to the character that I thought Sean might just have to move over, as in, as the best one. He's always self-deprecating, though, to be fair.
Of course, he's always really positive.
Positive, yeah.
Yeah. Craig's interpretation was like nothing we'd seen on screen before. Jimmy Bond was earning his stripes and making mistakes. What a guy. It was intriguing to see him being castigated by M, just like a naughty schoolboy would be by his headmaster, so he'd probably forgotten Golden Eyes. The script showed him as, and License to Kill, the script showed him as a vulnerable, troubled and flawed character, and his own films. Quite the opposite to my Bond. Craig was and is very much the Bond Ian Fleming had described in the books, a ruthless killing machine. It was a Bond that the public wanted, which is probably...
Yeah.
Well, that was right, wasn't it? It's pretty,
pretty
right. So impressed was Roger Moore that he chose to buy the DVD.
Roger Moore messing about with his scar.
Yeah, like... look, I don't know how this worked. Yeah.
It might never be open.
Yeah. Is that because he missed out on the first 500 PS3s?
Yeah.
Call of Duty. He has to buy Bond DVDs.
I know. Well, that's it. This is the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trey given co-producer Roger Moore, not even given a free copy in the post. See ya, mate.
So good.
Raymond Benson, author of 9 Bond novels, you know, post Fleming ones, called it the perfect Bond movie. Perfect, yeah. There were a few mixed critical reactions, so I thought I'd include them. You know, this is how mainstream they are. John Belfast of the Commercial Appeal. Who
top
wants to
critics.
See? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to dig.
Now I've been waiting for his. Yeah, I'm
yeah. You, John Belfast. Who wants to see Bond learn a lesson about ego? American radio personality Michael Medved. I'm sure we all haven't heard of him.
He's an avid listener.
I'm not sure I agree. Sometimes sluggish pacing, I don't agree with that, will frustrate some Bond fanatics. Some felt the ending was too long and the terrorist villains lacked it. Tim Adams of The Observer, well, I've heard of them, felt the film came off uncomfortably in an attempt to make the series grittier, but the few and far between the more negative reception. At the time, it was named the best film of the year by the Film Magazine. Film of the year. 2008, Entertainment Weekly named Casino Royale the 19th best film of the past 25 years.
Say that again, sorry, the 19th best film?
Ever. It's in the past 25 years, so in the 25 years before up to 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was, yeah.
I like this movie, but I don't agree with
it. It was on many critics' best of lists: Film, Empire, Entertainment Weekly, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, and they thought that at the time he might get an Academy Award nomination.
Really?
He did. Yeah, there was calls for it at the time. He did get a nomination for BAFTA at BAFTA, and he's the only actor to ever get.
He's doing Matt Craig.
Yeah, he got nominated for the Best Actor at the BAFTA Awards for that performance.
Feels a bit OTT for me. I think he's good in the movie, but, you know, it's not...
You're not that good.
Yeah, it's not awards fodder, you know.
No.
Even Connery never got nominated for Bond.
No, of course he did. Anyway.
No, but this is the Bond we've all finally been waiting for.
Human pickups. Absolutely outraged.
I'll quickly finish this about the awards and stuff, and then, my word, you'll be able to tear into all this, lads. At the BAFTAs, it won Best Sound and the Rising Star Award for Eva Green, which you've mentioned. It was nominated for 8 in total, including Best British Film, Best Screenplay, Herbison Wade, Best Music, fair enough, Cinematography, fair enough, Editing, fair enough, Production Design, yeah, Visual Effects, yeah, because you don't notice them. A good referee, yeah. Harry would say. An act of Craig.
The effect of a good referee.
Yes. Dying of the Day was a poor referee. In that
Mike Dean.
Yeah, so there you go. We've exhausted the film. Just final thoughts, lads, now on the film and how you sort of rate it within the series. I'll start with James.
All right.
It's a tough one. I know it's a it's a long question.
Yeah, for me, I just really like this movie. I think it is the shot in the arm that the franchise needed at the time. I think after Die Another Day, it needed a refresh. As much as I enjoy Pierce Brosnan, I don't think he's at fault with that film. I just think it's, you know, there's invisible cars and whatnot sort of undermine that film. But I love it. I really enjoyed this film. Visceral action, exemplary stunt work, and a committed central performance from Daniel Craig, even though he never moves his mouth.
Harry's yours.
For me, it modernizes the legendary spy effectively while holding on to some of the series' more OTT and fun elements. You know, he has a defibrillator in his car, he sinks a house. Like, it's fun stuff. It's not perfect. I do think it runs a little long, and as we've discussed throughout, some of the dialogue is a bit on the nose. But I just find it the most enjoyable out of all the Daniel Craig Bonds, and I think it gets the balance just right between fun and grit, and it's a film that I enjoy a lot and I've seen many, many times.
Where would you place it, James? And I know you said it's your favourite Daniel Craig, and I know you've not seen a lot of the other ones for a while, but didn't you say GoldenEye was maybe your other favourite?
Yeah, I don't think it's as good as GoldenEye. I'd probably put it in the top five for me personally. Yeah, I'd say it's around 4 or 5, I would say. Yeah. I think GoldenEye is a better film. I even quite like Tomorrow Never Dies, to be honest, ahead of this.
Good.
Yeah. Wow. Good lad.
He goes over a chopper on a motorbike. It's great.
Yeah.
But I've got a real soft spot for Pierce Brosnan in the role. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
But no, this is a really solid entry, I think.
Right, we'll just wait a bit longer, John. We'll get one of the negative ones out of the way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Harry's looking more tired, so I'll go to you first.
I'm not looking tired. I'm just agonising over what I say. because I absolutely love everything that James and John have said throughout this podcast. And I'm well aware that, you know, this is a fan favourite. On you know, a majority vote, Bond fans love this, and I'm pleased that non-Bond fans love it too. There's something in it, obviously, that people love, and as well as that, I can't disagree with the critical recognition that it got in many ways, because it is so, it's faultless, really, in terms of its story and the acting and some of the action set, you know, the action set pieces that are done are good, the music's great. Eva Green, Mads Mikkelsen, absolutely superb.
I'm just going to cut that bit, Harry. Harry Pickup says it was faultless. Casino Royale was faultless.
No. But
wind it, but play over and over
ham
again.
A ham sandwich can be faultless. It doesn't mean it's your favourite food.
Ham sandwich.
Yeah, as in faultless isn't necessarily a good thing. Well,
an affair isn't always a good thing.
Yes, but I definitely understand, not probably almost agree about what James says about the Bond franchise needing an injection, you know, a booster in the arm. I know mistakes are made with Die Another Day, absolutely. But it just feels a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction in some ways to pander to what was popular at the time and what other franchises were doing, what other expectations were, that they turned the back on a franchise that the world loved, and it definitely, you know, paid off success wise with this. You know, it was a really enjoyable affair. You know, it was great. While I can't criticize, I mean, I could go on forever. I don't know how I put it into words, but I don't criticize. My main struggle with it is that I was the first half, you know, I was in first third, I was in with it, but I just didn't like being in James Bond's company for the second two thirds at all. I didn't like him. I didn't like his character. He was smug, and the film centered around him. You know, Bond, when you're watching James Bond, you want to be his best friend. You want him to know you. You want to be, and I didn't like being in his company by the final third of this film. I loved everyone else. Everyone else is, you know, doing really well in it. And Daniel Craig doesn't necessarily give a dreadful performance or anything like that in the acting stakes. It's just he's unpleasant, he's unfriendly, and already he's showing signs of not loving the job that much. And sadly, I think the writers and everyone involved thought that's what people love the most. So they started to give us more and more of this Craig being miserable, it all being about Craig's Bond. Because I do almost fully agree with James and John, where they say that by the end of this film, you've got yourself into a pretty good position to go ahead now. And, you know, as this kind of one-off film, Casino Royale sort of reset things a little bit, but we can go ahead now. I understand that. But this was the birth of this horrible portrayal of Bond. It all started in this film. And I know he's supposed to have learned lessons and about trust, which I understand, and that's how Bond should be. But he's become not a very likeable hero, not a very likeable person, not a very likeable employee, not a very likeable colleague, genuinely. And I think it, even though this film is great in so many ways, it all happened because of this film. And it's slightly knee-jerk reaction to Die Another Day and throwing out all... It felt like it got rid of too much Bond. It stripped too much away. And... yeah, and now it seems like almost regret the affair, as you would, and they're sort of scrambling back to their old marriage, a bit like it's been a bit like Carl and Susan Kennedy on Neighbours. You know, they had Carl had that affair, and then it probably must have been about 15 years ago now, that, or 20 years ago, that affair.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're back together, but Skyfall seems like, you know, can I come back, please? Can I, you know, Skyfall? You know, I like the I was good in the Bentley, wasn't I? You know, and Aston Martin, whatever. And then, I'll admit, I don't know very much about it. Cars have never really grabbed me like that. But yeah.
How's that grabbing?
And then with Spectre, it's like the final roll of the dice, you know, can we go back to being happy again? And you're just making a real embarrassing mess of yourself. You should never have got yourself into this situation in the first place, basically.
So I want to hear more, Harry, but I will. John, please don't. You don't have to react to what Harry's just said. You can just... Just say what you were going to say before we even started this review.
Last thing to mention, I found doing this podcast really hard because I don't really like criticising films, least of all the Bond series, which I love. And part of me doesn't want to join in with that. And part of me wants to just enjoy talking about Bond. You know, and especially since at the moment we don't feel like the future of Bond is really in the balance. So I just want to appreciate Bond as much as I can. So I found this difficult because I'm really wanting to appreciate Bond, and I want to appreciate it like John James. And at the heart of it, at the core, I really struggle with his character, and I can't pretend that I like him.
Two quick questions, sorry, just to Harry. When you watched it this time, Harry, were you sometimes a bit like me? Because the first half is so good, you're almost won over, and you think, hang on, did I get it wrong?
Yes,
and that
absolutely
seems to keep happening every time you watch
this
film.
Exactly. And I couldn't believe, and I thought, oh, the first half's brilliant, and I'm more mature now, I'm going to like it. And I was fairly shocked that I still found it not a very appealing end to the film and not very enjoyable place to be. And I didn't like Bond. I thought I might have matured a bit and my opinion might have changed, but I feel exactly the same about that.
My second question was follow up question. If this was the new Bond that came out now, would you be quite that? Yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah, not so bad, because I wouldn't know if I didn't know what would follow it, kind of.
Well, as in almost like returning to this is better than where it's gone, isn't it?
It is in some ways, but like there's too much. It's still too... I know it's, you know, a bit of a reboot and origin story and all that, so it has to be, but it's too centralised. I couldn't have another film where it's so much about Bond, Bond and the job, Bond and love, Bond and retiring, Bond and his body, Bond and his failing body. I don't want that for a long time.
Dare I ask, Harry, where you rank it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think I had this rooted at the bottom, didn't I?
But
you did say that counted for nothing. Yeah. So.
And I'll say it again. And even when I recalibrate my list, it still doesn't count for much. But that will have been based on the fact that I'm quite upset about the path that it sent Bond down. I'm quite upset that everyone picks this as their favourite and disrespects and disregards what made Bond, you know, like it's like one of the crown jewels, basically, for the country and things like that. And I think people's short memories have disregarded a great franchise because they like this. So I'm just cross at it for those reasons. I do know it's a better film than all Craig's other ones. A lot of it comes down to the rewatchability, and I do feel quite poorly watching the final third of the Casino Royale. It doesn't. I feel like a bit depressed, a bit sick. And I genuinely, I don't get much enjoyment out of it. I know it's good, I know it's well done and all that, but it's no enjoyment for me.
So where would you rank it, was the question.
Is it? I honestly can't say.
Is it relegation zone just above?
Yes, oh yes.
Are they the bottom four though, Harry? The Craig ones? Or?
Yeah, I think they are. Oh yeah, they must be, yeah, yeah. And with Diamonds Are Forever teetering above, which I'm sorry about.
I'll edit that out, Tony.
Which I'm sorry about, but even that, I really can't tell say. And again, it's the Bond franchise. I absolutely love it. I don't want to be picking it apart, and I don't get any pleasure out of slagging this off or being negative about it. I find it really hard, actually. So I don't know about ranking it and placing it, but it's very low. Yes, yeah, it's going down to the championship.
Good league. Good stuff.
I've always said that, objectively speaking, it's in the three best Bond films in terms of being well made. I think the three best made films, is that the right phrase? What? Yep. Three most well made films are From Russia with Love, Majesty's Secret Service, and Casino Royale. I think, from in terms of a story, in terms of a direction, in terms of performances, action, altogether, it just the brilliantly made films. But as I said, when I first watched this film, I thought it was a good, brilliant film, but it wasn't a brilliant Bond film. It took, similar to Harry, in Harry's sense, I wasn't as passionately against, in terms of, like, you know, spoiled something. But it was alien to what I've known. But as I've grown up, I can't...
Grow up.
Grow up. I can't define what James Bond is, because I love a bit of every single portrayal. I love the suaveness of Connery, but actually I can also appreciate his campy laid back version in Diamonds Are Forever. Not as much, but I can appreciate
it.
I love the charm of Roger Moore, and yet I absolutely adore the hardness of Timothy Dalton. I love the mixture of Pierce Brosnan. So I don't want to say that what Daniel Craig does spoils the franchise. It's just his interpretation of it. I think that this is by far and away his best performance. Mm-hmm. This is this gives a motivation and a reasoning for his grumpiness. There is reasoning behind the way he is in this film, and it brings out a lot of character development. There's a lot of chemistry with Vespa Lind in it as well. There's a great bad guy in it as well, in terms of Mads Mikkelsen. It takes an aspect of a poker game, and which is a very Bondian thing, and it uses it as this metaphor for the psychology that's going on in terms of not being able to read Vespa. The point that the fact that he gets so betrayed that he can't trust anyone, and he becomes in this place at the end where it says Bond, James Bond, and all right, if you don't like that, that's your prerogative, that's fine. But he gets to the place.
It is my prize.
He gets to the place at the end of it where you can do whatever you want with. I don't think this film disrespects some of those things. It has a gun barrel. It's in a different place, but it has a gun barrel that's logical in terms of, like, he's becoming a 00 agent. If I had one criticism, I think, in terms of what could have been stripped, you didn't need all that MI6 stuff. You could have just had a money penny. You could have had a money penny, and I don't think that would have done any harm. I understand why Q was left out because of the lack of gadgets in it, but there wasn't a disrespect of the gadgets. I think the cars are still there. There is phenomenal action scenes in this. The direction is sensational, and it leaves the film in a state where you can take this anywhere. And the choices that have come after it are shocking. And I completely agree that the franchise is in a bad place at this moment in time. But I'm not sure that it's because of this film. Go on, Harry, go on.
No. That's rude of me to interrupt. You didn't interrupt my long number.
It's not a question, Sam. Just get on with it.
You can do whatever you want. And I think what the producers did, unfortunately, they went down the classic Alan Partridge route of going like...
Let's give them.
No, it's gone like that.
I've bounced
people
back.
People like Angry Bond at this moment. Let's give them some more. Yeah. It's very much that. And that's really
one way of looking at it.
Because that's one way of looking at it, exactly. Because that defies all the character development that's happened in this film.
Mm.
He stays at a level. He never changes from this point now. But again, I don't think it's because of Casino Royale. And as I've grown up older, and I've watched this film, I don't put it on a Sunday afternoon. That's not what I do with this film at all. But I don't do that with Honor Majesty's Secret Service. I have to sit, invest in them.
Yeah.
They are films that I have to invest. And I actually get so much out of them when I watch them like that. So that's my thing. I've rambled on about it.
No.
That's how I feel. It's my third favourite film in the franchise.
Interesting, just to say, John's top three, I think, is Casino Royale's third. Second is Honor Majesty's.
Yeah.
And first is License to Kill, because it's a very serious personal mission, but you can watch it on a Sunday afternoon.
Absolutely. Spot on. That's it. License to Kill, I love it.
The only thing I wanted to say, and I do apologise for interrupting, John, was I completely agree that it's good to have a mixture and the actors are allowed to do their own portrayal of Bonds. I think that's right, and it's great that we've got a variety. But it is Craig's portrayal of Bond that has led the series into a cul-de-sac. They need to reboot. Only four films later, they need to do a reboot.
Two films.
And I don't disagree with that in the slightest, Harry. I really don't disagree with that. But I think that the point I'm making is that this film is about his character development. It goes all on about his ego.
Yes,
It can be done and wrapped up, and he can change. But they decide not to. They decide to carry on with it. So I don't think you can blame Casino Royale for that, personally, because I think it's the choice that comes after that's the issue.
And the audience is... The sense of what audiences wanted, they misjudged, I think. Do you think they misjudged what audiences wanted? What audiences were mad about him being grumpy and muscly?
Well, they'll say they didn't misjudge it because Skyfall was even more successful financially, wasn't it? Didn't it make over $1 billion dollars worldwide? Yeah. Mm. So they'll say, look, we nailed this. We know what we're doing.
And both of those, a bit like John said, at the end of Casino Royale and at the end of Skyfall, it puts it in that place where Bond has had character development. I personally might not have agreed with how they did it, and I'm a bit annoyed we had to go through all that rigmarole, but it puts us in a place where we're back to normal Bond. The next one is going to be a normal Bond film.
Yeah.
We've done that. Let's get on with it. And then, you know, Quantum is nothing like that, and Spectre is just a joke.
I find it really difficult as well, because I think maybe at the time I didn't quite appreciate, you know, I could see the faults of Die Another Day, the many faults of Die Another Day, but I probably didn't really appreciate fully where that film had left the franchise. It made a lot of money, that's fair enough, but it had not done well with critics, and I don't know, I think there was a general feeling of this franchise could be a bit in trouble. Like, you're gonna have to do something, you're gonna have to change something, but maybe not as fundamental as this. But and so I completely fully understand and probably I do agree with the idea that it had to strip out a lot of the nonsense that was in Die Another Day, the CGI, the ridiculous gadgets. But I don't think it had to strip out as much as it did. That's my own personal view. I think it, you know, as Harry kind of said, it sort of saw what Batman had done with Batman Begins on the back of its own Die Another Day in Batman and Robin, but Batman and Robin is miles worse than Die Another Day is, in my opinion. Getting Martin Campbell in was a really good, really sensible decision, and one that pays off brilliantly. He directs it superbly. The action he does brilliantly, but I think also his direction of the intimate scenes and the characterization he does really well with as well. I don't think it's, you know, and that's not easy to be a director. Mm. You know, you often get a director who can do one or the other, or he's clearly better at one or the other, but I think he does really well in that respect. I think all the actors are fully committed to it and deliver great performances. I can't think of a single actor in it who doesn't give it their all and is miscast or plays anything wrong. Yeah, Richard Branson needs to go and take a long, hard look
miscast, at miscast, as I'm sorry. I was going to say Daniel Craig.
I think Craig does good job of what they wanted and what was written.
He's cast well for whoever this guy is.
The cinematography is brilliant. It's a beautiful looking film. David Arnold's best Bond score, and makes me sad that he's not still doing it. And I think that would have helped a continuation for Daniel Craig's portrayal. It's maybe not my favourite M portrayal. That's not Dame Judy's fault. That's that's how she's written. But obviously, as I've kept saying, my problems are with the sort of second half of the film, and I've become less engaged. And there's a not clear villain in the third act. I've said this so many times. I'm so sorry to listeners, you guys. So I become less interested. My problem is, well, I've said a few things, so I can't. Why am I saying it in the singular? Some of my problems are that I do agree to an extent that it's like, right, you can set this up. You can, you know, this is now, I don't know. I don't know about that, because this film was basically said, you don't need the gun barrel right at the start. Yeah, I can understand the logic. Oh, I should have also said, I love the song and I love the title sequence, which are brilliant. And I think it will be the best.
But most of it.
The best title sequence in the franchise, which is some acclaim. Yeah. But I think the pre-title sequence isn't my favourite. And the removal of the gun barrel says, you can do what you like with that. That's up for grabs, that you can put it wherever you want. You know, I take that it sort of fits in with where this being the start of the franchise again, or the start of this guy's journey. I understand about the gadgets and everything, but it's like a green light saying, you don't need that. You don't need Moneypenny. You don't need a main villain. Yeah, so I think it's almost... And what you do need is you do need personal. You do need gritty. You do need, and, you know, grounded. I think that's where it left the franchise. It was basically... It's hard to explain, but I think there's no way that you would have got a really good, normal, non-personal mission after this, because all the acclaim was saying that, all those reviews are saying, oh yeah, what this gives us is a gritty portrayal. It's finally Bond, you know, is this cold, and, you know, and that's what we wanted and everything. So it can't be, right, well, Bond now goes on a, I don't know, I just think, because this has been so successful and everything, and it, you know, that shouldn't be discounted, but the fact that it was so personal and so gritty and so about his, you know, his love and everything like that, of course that's what they're going to try and pursue for the rest of his tenure. And, you know, he still hasn't had a non-personal mission, because it's all, they're trying to do this, they're trying to hark back to this to an extent. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think it's more, I've appreciated it more being more Bond-like every time I've watched it, I would say, which is a good thing. I agree that Bond shouldn't be so prescriptive that you have to do everything and, you know, yes, things can change. I think too many things have changed in this. I have to applaud the fact that it saved the franchise, and even though the franchise might not be in a place I particularly like it, at least it's still going. Because it may not have done, I don't know. I like watching the first half. I don't like watching the second half, which makes it not a film I particularly want to put on unless I really have to. Yeah, I appreciate why people really like it. It's not my favourite Bond film. I think it's the best Daniel Craig Bond film. I prefer watching Skyfall because it's easier to watch and it's a more pleasant viewing. I think it's got a better template for an action film. All the stuff I've been banging
on.
So yeah. I find it really hard to place it, therefore. Because objectively, like you say, John, I think it's a very well made film, really good. But it's not one I particularly enjoy watching overall. So it's not right down at the bottom, but it's staying up with a couple of games to spare. I know I always use those analogies. Sorry, Tom, go on.
Do you think they've just thought of this now? Do you think that because, I'm just thinking about Roger Moore going on about how good Craig was doing it differently, there's a pressure on each new actor now to do it differently to the one that's gone before. Not, but there's also a pressure to do it more like the serious ones, the critical ones. And like I say, no one's going to come out of the next Bond. What they could do is say, oh, I want to be more like the Roger Moore days. Even though they'd be wrong to think that meant it was silly, because obviously they weren't.
Yeah, really. I think they could come out and say, people want escapism and, you know, let's have an enjoyable, fun ride.
Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
These things move in cycles.
Yeah,
they
are.
It's not going to be super serious Bond from now until when the franchise if it ever wraps up. They have to reinvent it each time. And, you know, when we come out of into a post-COVID world, will people want gritty realism? No, they're probably going to want more escapism.
Absolutely.
And there'll be a new actor or actress. We don't know what direction that they're going to take the franchise. And they're going to adjust to what they think is going to work best for audiences at the time. I'm looking forward to them making it more like Fast and Furious and Bond kicking back at a barbecue with a Corona.
But only if they've been to Jersey.
I think I would. I'd definitely settle for that. I don't want it to go the MCU route where everyone has the same sense of humour and, you know, all the characters are the same.
An extended cinematic universe is not this needs at all. It needs to be a singular franchise. It doesn't need spin-offs. It needs to be focused on the character of Bond, 007, and then it's just a question of tone and execution.
I think you're right. I think, like I say, when Connery was doing it when he started it, it was completely new. It was an experiment almost. There'd never been a cinematic character in loads of films, had there, I don't think. And then you've got the pressure that Lazenby had the one. And this, I do think this owes a lot to Her Majesty's Secret Service, but perhaps I haven't touched on that enough.
Yeah.
It really does. I don't know why people don't compare it that often. It's so weird because it's the first one since then where we've had a proper love story, you could say. There are relationships in previous Bonds, which I find completely believable. Like, you laugh, you know, the Roger Moore, Maud Adams in Octopussy.
Yeah.
I, you know, even Bond and Cara in Living Daylights. And obviously Pierce Brosnan and Sophie Marceau in The World Is Not Enough. Even Isabella Scorupco, I mean, it's a soft spot for. In terms of the tone of the film, it is an awful lot like Her Majesty's in terms of the love thing. Obviously, it's got the added thing with the deception, hasn't it? That isn't really in that, because that's in the novel. But it's certainly, watching it this last time, it was a lot better than I'd remembered. And I'd only seen it 18 months ago before that. I think it may be because since starting with the podcast, I've thought, come on, let's fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously not mine, I can't see a thing. Set time is 6 minutes. 6 minutes, check. But watch it with a sort of more in the sense that you know that we are speaking for lots of Bond fans who don't agree with everything that we agree with. And it's great that we have lots of different views of the Bond film. Like you say, Harry, don't like criticising things just for the sake of it. And I like to think you can try and find the good in everything. Mm. Not just films, you know. Why be negative for the sake of being negative? Yeah. This is an escapist film, even though it's not as, you know, aspirational as the previous ones, because the guy's an idiot, isn't he? But but there's still a heck of a lot to enjoy. I thought the look of it was much better this time around. I don't know, it just looked more sheen. The sheen of it was beautiful, and the music was better than I remembered. The action was better than I remembered. And the love story was better than I remembered. So you get, like I say, Martin Campbell is packing a lot in. He's doing a great job. It's such a tough spinning all these plates. He's done a great job. But I wouldn't have done this personally if I was Broccoli and Wilson after Dying of the Day. I do think it was. I mean, how old was I? I was like at uni when Dying of the Day came out. And the first half, we were sat there and we were, this is all right, actually. Because it was back in those days when I think we saw it on a Friday. And there weren't many press screenings before that. You know, it wasn't like the latest films, especially with the pandemic, where everyone's seen them, haven't they, before anyone's seen them, if you know what I mean. And it was just almost disbelief at where that film was going. And you just thought, I was more worried that because Dying of the Day was so popular, will they just go down that silly route? Yeah. Well, they could have done that. And I wouldn't have wanted that, obviously. So be thankful that it didn't do that and got all silly and fantastical and, dare I say it, like an 80s American action, you know, children's franchise, I don't know, something like that. So I'm glad for that. And we did get excited, Martin Campbell on board and all that sort of thing, and he did deliver. I'll I have to say, I'll never be sold on Daniel Craig, and that's partly because of his looks. And you know, probably can't say that, but I don't find him suave and smooth enough for the Bond that I would like. But he's very good for the Bond that they're trying to put across in this film. You know, women do, you know, women and men find him very attractive, and they find the character interesting. I'll compare now to the Michael Keaton Batman, because I can get glimmers of his backstory, his pain, everything, just from the way he looks and the way he acts in scenes.
Yeah.
I don't need to go... And they didn't even have to do it in this film. I don't need to go on and on and on about his ego and have some woman tell him, and you know, whoever he's with, and M tell him, and Mathis tell him, and even the main baddies telling him about his body and his... I don't need that. And if I want, you know, that Timothy Dalton in his films, the little look he gives to Felix when Della mentions that, you know, he was married once, and just before that, there's just a little look he gives to them that's like a bit of pain and doesn't really want to talk about it. And I mean, it's just great acting, isn't it? And Daniel Craig's a good actor. He could have done that. It's too on the nose for me in the emotional stakes. But because Craig and Green are so good at the acting in this film, it does still work. It's just not the direction I would have taken it. So I have improved my thoughts on the film definitely since seeing it. Because I did see it, I saw it once myself without making notes. And then I saw it once with Jennifer making notes. Or the other way around. Yeah, because I won't want to stop-start watching it with her. But yeah, so it has gone up in my estimations. It might not have gone up in my rankings, though. Good night. Thank you, guys. I'm sure we will discuss the film within our other reviews and our other specials, because it's a defining Bond film. It's the most popular in terms of the critics and the Bond fans themselves, apparently. Can't believe it, but... Mm-hmm. It is, so we have to give it its weight. I think we've been respectful of the film. I know we have different views on it, and people have got different views on the films I love the most. You know, we will we'll hear criticism of License to Kill. You know, we won't like it, but there are some. I mean, but yeah, The Man with the Golden Gun. I can.
Yeah,
we'll review that. We have reviewed it. Sorry, by now. But there's an awful lot of silly, stupid things in that. I just happen to like that tone, and I think it's funny. There's enough brilliant stuff in the film to, even if you don't like that stuff. Casino Royale, there is enough good stuff in it that I like. So I do think it's more good than bad, but it's what it did for the franchise, who knows? That can be another massive debate. I mean, we've given it a bit of debate now, but... but guys, thank you so much. I think this has been brilliant. James, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to have you, James. Very good to have you, James.
Yeah. My pleasure. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Do come back. Guys, I'm so sorry if I've
been
negative.
No, James is a very forgiving guy, I'm sure he'll. No, there's nothing personal.
I didn't make it.
Just likes it. Give him a break. Shout out for your reconsideration podcast with James, Rob, of course, of this parish, and Simon Lewis, our good friend as well. So
check it out.
Do subscribe to that. It's brilliant. Lots of films, like James has said earlier, which deserve a second look or a millionth look if they're a Jean-Claude Van Damme film. Rob's case. So thank you guys for this evening. Thank you, Math. Thank you, John. Thank you, Harry. Thank you, James. And we will be back with more reviews, specials, and you know, people going on and on and on and on and on and on for hours. So join us. Good night, lads.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
Cheers. Really,
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.